Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon, and I'm so glad you could join us for another dive into the cardboard boxes and binders full of baseball cards, some memorable sets, great cards, and then, of course, some not-so-memorable sets or not-so-great cards. And we're kind of touching on a little bit of both of those circles in the Venn diagram of collecting in this week's episode. This is going to be a fun one because this was an idea that kind of just came on a whim for me. We had a lot of audience participation, and it's about a topic that I think a lot of collectors don't even think about. And I think it's sometimes some collectors take themselves a little too seriously about their collecting habits. I mean, really, we're collecting baseball cards. I mean, we're grown adults, you know, doing something that we did as kids. So let's not take ourselves too seriously here. We are all nerds, geeks, and spazzes. And I think part of not taking yourself seriously is realizing something you do on a somewhat regular basis, and that is the guilty pleasure. And there are a lot of guilty pleasures in baseball card collecting, and it typically involves junk wax era cards. And I've said before on this program, even though the period from roughly 1988 through the mid-90s is often called the junk wax era, there's really not a whole lot of junk. True, there's some really bad cards out there from that era. And I think the junk wax label is affixed to those cards mostly because there's just too many of them. There were literally millions of each card in each set printed, especially in the early to mid-90s. And the market is still flooded. There's just still too many of these cards out there. So collectors don't really like them because there's still too many cards out there. The value for these cards, not that great. The only value you get for some of these cards from this era are mostly rookie or maybe second-year cards for established star Hall of Fame players, and that's about it. The commons you can get for a penny a piece. Most card shops don't want to buy any junk wax era cards. It's better if you just donate them than try to, you know, make some money off of them. But as I've said before, the junk wax era, when you look at some of the cards that were produced and are still available, first of all, there's some great value out there. I mean, you can buy these things dirt cheap if you're just looking for a cheap thrill. But also, there's some really good sets, good designs, memorable pictures taken, cards that were big chase cards back in the day that maybe aren't so now, but you get to, you know, tell some great stories about them. So, I think a lot of collectors, they get to that mid to late 80s to mid 90s era and they just go, who cares? Well, we care because when I was collecting, that was my wheelhouse when I was, in my teens and going full speed ahead with collecting baseball cards. It happened to be in the late 80s and early to mid 90s. And based on the statistics of our podcast, which has been spread out over about 2 years now, I know that you were growing up at that time. And while many collectors got out during the junk wax era, including myself, as I've said before, really after 93, 94, the Major League Baseball strike in 94, the fact that I was, a junior and senior in high school spending my money elsewhere as opposed to collecting baseball cards. I'm part of that era, too, that stepped away from it and got away from it for many, many years. But, still, that's when I collected. That's where the memories were made. That's where the stories come from. So there's a guilty pleasure in occasionally opening up that old wax. And we're going to talk about the guilty pleasure, not just the one that I experience buying a box of 92 Topps baseball and ripping through it in my spare time this past week. But also a lot of listener reaction. We had a lot of fans chime in, talk about their guilty pleasures. So we're going to go through those and offer up my two cents on some of them. And also we'll just talk about why you need that guilty pleasure. you know, you're older, you're a little smarter with your money. You don't want to just throw it around. But you know what? Sometimes you just need to just make that one purchase where you go, nah, why the hell not? And often, not always, but often, that's the most fun purchase you can make. So we'll talk about that as well as the 92 top set. That is something that does get overlooked as time has gone on. And we will also talk about, I've got five or six players from the four packs that I opened in our video break, which if you go on our Wax and Gum Stains Twitter timeline, you could see the link from yesterday, or go to YouTube, just type in Wax Ecstatic in the search window. If you look at the pack break, instead of opening the entire box on the video stream, because YouTube only allows me so much time to post a video, I basically just took the top four packs off of the box and we opened that up. So a few memorable names, a few miscreants and mischiefs from that era, and a couple of notable names that you may have forgotten about over time. Now, before we do all that, just want to remind you that Wax Ecstatic during the off season is coming your way every other Friday. So our next show will be coming up on Friday, December the 14th. And that also means that our next video break or video exhibition of whatever cards we're talking about will be released on Thursday, December the 13th. So keep an eye on the Wax and Gum Stains Twitter timeline for information on what our topics are and what packs we may be breaking to talk about on that show. And if you want to keep the show alive and well during this downtime, please consider making a cash donation to our PayPal account. That's at paypal.me/waxecstatic. Again, paypal.me/waxecstatic. If you have already made a donation, thank you so much. We appreciate it. If you haven't yet, please consider, even if it's just a few bucks, $5 or $10, it's always a nice little cause to donate to. What happens with the money that you donate? It goes right back into the show. Trust me when I say I do not make myself rich off of this program. If there was a way to make myself rich off of this program, I would have figured it out by now, and I wouldn't be asking for your money. But the money that you do donate through paypal.me/waxecstatic goes back into maintaining the program on our home base of audioboom.com, also our archives, and it also goes to the purchase of packs. And I'm still trying to track down some different packs from different eras, and we may have a revisit to some packs from the early 80s that we have in storage here, but always on the hunt for, you know, maybe a late 70s pack, maybe some oddball packs that will provide some fodder, some fun talk during the off season. So know that your money is not going into my pocket. It's going right back into the show again with the upkeep and maintenance at Audio Boom, the upkeep of our archives as well. You can listen to well over 100 episodes from the history of the program, and also the purchase of packs, which we do enjoy breaking here and discussing about on future shows. So paypal.me/waxecstatic, that is the direct link. And again, if you've made a contribution, thank you. If you haven't, please consider it, because your contributions do keep the program running. And if you're new to the program, I know during our little back and forth with listeners this past week over Guilty Pleasures, I've seen a lot of people start following the Twitter account. If you're new to the program, you can listen to Wax Ecstatic at our home base of Audio Boom or through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry, Google Play, and Spotify. And of course, there are other ways of getting podcast and RSS feeds of podcast. If you're technically smart enough to figure that out, whatever way you listen to podcast, just look for Wax Ecstatic. Again, it comes out every other Friday during the off season. All right, let's talk about this particular Guilty Pleasure. I'll give you a little background into what kind of created this episode. A couple weeks ago, I was at the local card show here, and I live in Tampa, and there's a card show at a local flea market once a month, and I enjoy going to it because, first of all, you have some really good dealers there. You know, it's not like the old days where you had the baseball card show and there's 100 tables and there's some fishy deals going on. It's a small show. You know, there's maybe 10, 12 dealers there. And there's quite the variety of cards, and it's right up my alley because I'm a big collector of vintage, and I don't mean just wax, junk wax era vintage, so to speak. But I've always been a big collector of cards from the 50s and 60s and 70s, ever since I was a kid. So there's plenty of that out there, but there's also plenty of junk wax era stuff out there. And there's also plenty of new stuff as well. And I bring my 8-year-old son out there, and we often go out there with a friend of ours and his son. And it's a lot of fun. You know, even if you spend just an hour there, it's great to just go to, you know, all the tables, you check out everything that's there. And I've been able to get some great deals because the hobby is, of course, not as strong financially as it was when we were younger. People are not exactly setting up their college loan repayments off the sale of baseball cards. So you've got a lot of people, dealers, who have been in the business for many, many years, and they've got a large collection of cards. They still like to collect. They still like to buy and sell. But they also, you know, they don't want to be saddled with cases and cases and cases of cards. So they tend to move them out at a decent price. And as I've said on the program before, especially with vintage, if you're not a stickler for condition, you know, you're okay with, you know, very good or, you know, PSA 5 or 6 condition cards, you can get some incredible deals at a show like this. So I was at the show a couple weeks ago, and I'm going around dealer to dealer, and there's one particular dealer that I go to because he often has some junk wax era stuff that he'll just unload for a song. I mean, it's just ridiculous how cheap some of the deals are. And a few months ago, I got a box of 87 tops from him, I think for $9. I've picked up a few junk wax era packs for $4, and it's just a cheap thrill just to open them, see what's in there. Maybe there's something good, maybe not. It goes in the donation box, and or it goes to, you know, the junk wax era sets that I'm slowly building in my spare time. So, you know, it's a guy who I can go to his table, spend maybe $10 and come back with, you know, a box or, you know, 20 or 30 unopened packs from various years in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, like I said, it's just a cheap thrill. So I go to the table, and my son and I were just kind of looking around at the cards he's got. And there is a box of 92 tops on there. Now, 92 tops for me personally. Now, this was like at the pinnacle of my collecting days. Let's see, in 1992, I would have been 14, turning 15 during the World Series. And 92 was a great year as a baseball fan for me, being a Blue Jays fan. That was the year they won their first World Series. And, you know, life is good. You're a teenager. You're dealing with the awkward life of high school and junior high school at the time. But you could always turn to your baseball cards as a release from the world. And we'll talk a little more detailed about the 92 Tops set later on in the program, because I think it's an overlooked set. And also, this is the point of no return in the hobby. You know, the days of the, you know, bubblegum being thrown into baseball card packs and getting a pack for 50 cents, those were over. That was done starting in 1992 and moving forward. But, you know, the 92 Tops set, I remember collecting a lot when I was a kid. In fact, that was one of the first wax boxes I bought with my own money when I was a kid. Not the first one. I believe the first box I bought would have been 91 Donruss, if I recall correctly. But, 92 Tops was one that it was a set that I liked. It was a huge progressive step forward over previous top sets. And It was a set that I actually also got as a Christmas gift. It's the only factory set that I have ever purchased or owned. Certainly, I didn't purchase it because it was a Christmas gift. But I still have it, and it is opened, because part of the tease that Topps did in 1992 was, here's the complete 792-card set, plus 8 Topps gold cards. Ooh, so yeah, you know, I'm 15 years old. I have to see what the gold cards are. So, of course, I just, you know, open up the box and decrease its value by about 60%. And I don't recall getting any big gold cards in there. But they're still in the box, and it's still sitting in my closet somewhere. But, 92 Tops is a set that you're not going to get a lot of, you know, big dollar cards for. The Manny Ramirez rookie card is the big one. And you have early career cards for Frank Thomas and Randy Johnson, Ken Griffey Jr. You've got some later career cards for other big stars from the 80s, Cal Ripken Jr., Tony Gwynn, Sandberg, Boggs, Nolan Ryan, you name it. There's a ton of star cards. George Brett, Paul Molitor, you know, players who were nearing the end of their careers, Robin Yount. But, you know, when you look at the overall dollar value of what you're going to pull from these packs, it's not a whole lot. And I'll be honest, after opening the box, maybe some rainy day activity is going through the cards that I got and assembling them and, you know, putting together a checklist of cards I need. And maybe someday I'll complete it just for the hell of it. But, you know, a lot of the dupes are going to end up in the common card donation box, and they'll go out and they'll find a good second home somewhere. But here I am at the Steelers table, and here's this box of 92 tops staring back at me. And I asked the guy, I said, how much for the 92 tops box? And he goes, $7. And without hesitation, I pulled the box closer to me, because I was going to buy that bad boy. And this is where the guilty pleasure comes in. Because, you know, I'm going into this card show on a budget. And that's not easy to do, by the way. And I have $20 in my wallet. And that's a good way to try to stick to a budget. Go to the ATM, get, you know, a certain cash amount out, whatever you can afford. And really try to force yourself, okay, I'm only buying with this cash. So I've come into the show with just $20, and already I am deciding to give up seven of it to pure junk wax era gold, quite literally too, because there was the Topps gold inserts that year. But it's that guilty pleasure. It's the realization, okay, I'm not really going to cash in with anything that I pull from this box, but for maybe an hour someday, I'm going to open up this box and, just for the hell of it, relive some glory days from my teenage years, flipping through all these cards, seeing what I can get, and, you know, just kind of forgetting about the world for about an hour. And I'm sure that's a big reason why you have your guilty pleasure as well. Whatever junk wax era or whatever set from your childhood you occasionally go back to, whether it's, you know, opening up packs or just going through a box of commons, whatever the case may be. And the fact that it's $7 was the absolute steal for me. First of all, if you go on eBay, if you type in 92 Topps Baseball, the wax boxes will cost you about $20 to $25. Why? Shipping. That's it. It costs about $14 to securely ship a box of baseball cards. Box of packs from that day. And it's just easy to go with the, the United States Postal Service pre-packaged, pre-priced box. Like I said, it's $14. So even if you get the box for a mere $9 or $10, you're paying that extra $14 to have it come your way. And then, of course, if the dealer is looking to make an extra buck or two, they tack that on there. So there's just the simple savings of, well, I'm not paying $25 for it. I'm getting it for $7. So, you know, that's the thrifty part of me going, aha, I'm saving a few bucks doing it this way. But for $7, I mean, think about what you do for $7 today for fun. You can't get in a movie for $7. You can't get into a museum for $7. You can get into a state park, sure. You can Netflix certain movies or series of TV shows for that much money. But again, $7, all right, I'll spend it because I'm going to get some fun out of it. And why not? It's cheaper than if I went out online to try to find this stuff. And as I've said on this show before, if you want to make a local card shop owner or a card dealer at a show very happy, buy some junk wax, take it off of his or her hands, because they're not making any money off of it. They just want to clear it out. And if you can go, sure, I'll give you $7 for this wax box, bingo. They're glad that they've got it off their hands and you've got a little bit of fun. So I take this box home and I put it away for a couple of weeks. And as I was thinking of this particular podcast, I'm thinking, well, you know, what am I going to talk about this week? Let's see, I've got these packs in storage here. Haven't really had any luck getting any of the late 70s stuff I've been chasing online recently. Well, oh yeah, there's this wax box. And I was going to open it up anyways. So here's what I'll do. I'll open up four packs on our video link, and then I'll open up the whole box and talk about it on the program. And that's exactly what I did. So I've got a handful of cards from the four that I opened I want to talk about. I want to talk about the set. But most importantly, I wanted to talk to you about your guilty pleasure. Because, again, I'm at this table. I've only got $20. And here's this box of cards from a set that I opened 26 years ago. From a set that I had a whole bunch of extra common cards laying around the house that I got rid of years ago. That come from a time in the hobby that I've often forgotten about because the cards from those years are still flooding the market. I'm just really not that interested in it. But I just needed to scratch that itch. $7, box of cards. All right, you got yourself a deal. And I was wondering, it's like, why do people need guilty pleasures like that? You know, why, if you're, you know, watching your weight, why every now and then do you just dive into that pint of Ben and Jerry's, you know? Why, if you're a music aficionado and you're the cool guy on the block, why do you every now and then, you know, listen to that schmaltzy old Madonna hit from the early 80s? You don't like Madonna, but you know what? Sometimes you just need that mindless drivel of Borderline or Holiday just to make the drive home a little more interesting. You know, we all have guilty pleasures. We all have that itch that needs to be scratched just every now and then. The stuff that you gave up a long time ago, it's passé, it's nerdy, it's stupid, it's childish. That's way back in my childhood. That's long forgotten. But every now and then, you get that good feeling doing it, you know? I mean, you may not watch that much TV or you watch the award-winning stuff that's only on Netflix or Amazon Prime, yet you see that rerun of Alf or Night Court on TV and you sit down and you watch the whole episode. You know, it's, we all have that and it's in our DNA. We have to, you know, every now and then just, you know, go out and do the absurd just for a few minutes, just to kind of, you know, get a little bit of a energy boost. And that's the same thing with this hobby. You know, a lot of us have moved on from the cards of the junk wax era. You know, maybe you're specializing in vintage cards now, or you're specializing in some of the new sets that are out now. And still you have your collection from your childhood. But yeah, you know, that's just sitting in a box somewhere. But every now and then you spend the, you know, couple of bucks here or there to get some junk wax and you have at it. Now, by pure chance, Steve, our buddy WaxPack916, posted pictures of unopened packs of 87 and 81 Donruss. He went to his local shop, spent maybe, I don't know, Steve, what, $5-6 on these two packs total, and shared his find, including the gum casualty of the 81 Donruss pack. And when we talk about gum casualties in 81 Donruss, we're talking Jack the Ripper, you know, bowels and entrails removed casualty. Those are not pretty. It's actually kind of neat. He took the picture of the gum casualty. It's the Dick Ruthven card. And the way that the gum is slabbed onto the card, it actually looks like Ruthven's looking around the gum stick. It's kind of funny. So it's kind of neat that we did the 92 Tops break, and I've got Steve chiming in with his junk wax. So I asked the question. I said, all right, what is your guilty pleasure? And boy, did we get a ton of responses here. So I'm going to go basically from first to last, and I'll offer up some thoughts on some of these. Drew Zachman, 93 or 94 Donruss. And I'd forgotten about 93 and 94 Donruss. I did a podcast on 93 Donruss a while back. But yeah, 93 Donruss is actually a very, very sharp set. Couldn't quite keep up with the rest of the pack, with the Upper Decks and Top Stadium clubs and Fleer Ultras of the world. And of course, the Leaf Company at that time was kind of pushing Donruss to the back burner. They were putting all of their focus and attention on the Leaf branded sets. But yeah, 93, and I had to look up 94 Donruss because I did buy a few packs back in the day, but not many. And yeah, those are some great cards, and you can still get them for an absolute song. He also mentions in football, 88 Tops. He has two boxes sitting around. 88 Tops football is a beautiful set. I ended up collecting a lot of 89. I got some cheap boxes a long time ago. But yeah, 88 Tops football is beautiful. Speaking of football, Bob Andrews chiming in with 90 Pro Set football. I think that was the first football set I ever bought. And I remember where it was, too. I was on a weekend trip with our Boy Scout troop in St. Augustine, and we found a card shop in St. Augustine. And of course, we're all teenagers, so we all go into the card shop in the middle of our 20-mile city hike and end up buying some sports cards. So that's funny. I remember Pro Set football. Let's see. CLM Design, 90 Fleer Baseball. Love 90 Fleer. And if you've listened to this podcast before, you know, I had this special connection to 90 Fleer. That was in 1990 when my family would finish going to church every Sunday. We'd go across the street. There was an Albertsons grocery store. We'd pick up some things at the store. And they had a little baseball card section, and I used to just buy 90 Fleer every Sunday. Again, it's not a great set. There's not a whole lot of star power or big rookie cards, but it's just a really nice-looking set. Dub Mentality, 91 Tops for me. Tons of variations, plus Globax. I'm not as crazy about the printing variations in terms of you know, how dark or light the backs of the cards are. But as you will hear, 91 Tops is a favorite for a lot of people. Nick of the handle Voss Brink, not the cheapest, but 86 Tops for now. Yeah, you know what, Nick? I've actually come around on 86 Tops too. That is another one of those sets from the early days of the junk wax era, if you will, that I've actually decided I'm going to build the set out. And it's not cheap, but it's still pretty affordable. You can still get some wax and rack pack and cello pack lots for fairly cheap online. So yeah, 86 Tops is still out there. Another favorite for a lot of people, 87 Tops. Jason Weissel checks in, 87 Tops baseball, still my favorite set. You're not going to find too many people that argue with you on that. NGT Collectibles says many favorites. But 1989 Donruss Baseball is one of the best in terms of great rookie cards and cheap wax boxes. You're absolutely right. 89 Donruss doesn't get a fair shake because a lot of people kind of, you know, link it up to 88 Donruss, which also doesn't get a fair shake in my opinion. But of course, 89 is the year where Upper Deck comes out. Everybody's looking at Upper Deck. Tops and Fleer had some memorable sets that year as well. So 89 Donruss often gets overlooked, but yeah, you've got the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie. You've got some other early career cards and rookie cards in that set. It's a decent design. And yeah, you can get boxes pretty darn cheap. And that is definitely a cheap guilty pleasure. Here's one that a lot of people won't like, but hey, to each their own. Marcus says, 91 Fleer. Ah, yes, the old banana peel set. And after that nice 90 Fleer set, 91 was baffling. But Marcus says it's the first and only set I ever completed, and I still buy packs of it. And I find that's a common link, too, with card collectors and their favorite sets. Sometimes it's the first set you completed that becomes your favorite. Or it's the first set of cards or the first packs of cards from a set that you buy. And that's why I have a nice affinity to 89 Tops. It's, again, a set that's not going to make you rich if you collect the whole thing. But that was the first pack of baseball cards I bought. So, you know, much like 91 Fleer was big for Marcus, 89 Tops was big for me. Bay State Baseball Cards, 85 Fleer. That is a beautiful set. Love 85 Fleer. And he says, I was a staunch Topps guy as a kid, but looking back, those early mid-80s Fleer sets were dope. Absolutely agree. I've said that Fleer put out some of the best card sets in their company history, but also in the hobby. In my opinion, 83 to 87 with the 84, 85, 86 sets being absolute bombs. They're just, and I mean that in a good way, they're just great sets, really, really good quality cards. Cards to trade Dave. I still have a lot of holes in the 90s to fill in. So yeah, you know, sometimes it's just adding to your collection. You just go out and get those guilty pleasure sets pretty easily. Joe Delino, 91 Topps Baseball. Always pick one up when I see them at the market for cheap. Still fun to get a Mark Whitten card with his hand over the border. Also, if you're lucky, maybe you get one of those throwback cards that Topps put into the packs that year. They were celebrating their 45th anniversary. Hopefully you don't get a redemption card. I don't think Topps will redeem those for the bigger name cards, but maybe you get a throwback card thrown in there. Andrew Haas says, I bought a case of 87 Topps this summer just because. A case? Are you telling me the 24-box case? Good for you. And you can get those relatively cheap, you know, if you have a few hundred bucks to throw around. It is my favorite set of my collecting days, and it's great to just be able to rip a few packs out of boredom on some random night. Although not cheap, I do love the 85 Fleer card. So we got another vote there. Lost Ways 27. I was hooked on 88 Donruss and 90 Topps Baseball. Again, a couple of sets that in the grand scheme are not extremely popular, but I don't think they get the credit that they're due. 90 Topps. I absolutely love 90 Topps. And I've done a podcast on that one where you get the mix of new and old. You've got that really 90s graphic design look, lots of color, lots of movement on the front. And on the back, you get that weird Dick Tracy 1940s checker taxicab look. It's an interesting mix. Bill Enk says, I get a kick out of 89 Fleer Baseball to pull a Ripken error, and I have yet to pull one. Somebody's searching my boxes I buy. I know it. I've got a few 89 Fleer packs just sitting around as well, mostly for that, because there are some really good rookie cards in that set. But yeah, maybe you get the Billy Ripken card. Joey Mealy, 91 Topps all day. Really an underrated set, I agree. Ricky Bobby with a shot from his couch, a box of Upper Deck soccer cards. 1993 Upper Deck Soccer. It was all about World Cup 94. And of course, the United States hosting World Cup 94. So there was a little bit of a surge in soccer merchandise then. That's great. Angel Eyes with Action Packed and 99 Retro in the lunch boxes. Action Packed. Remember those? Boy, we went crazy with Action Packed because it was kind of 3D, but it wasn't. You know, the player was, you know, it was lifted a little bit off the surface of the card. Those were some great ones. Steve Bowman also chiming in with 90 Upper Deck Baseball. That's another one. You can get some pretty cheap deals for 90 Upper Deck and some great star cards too. And that is an often overlooked Upper Deck set because 89, of course, sets the bar. And some of the later sets, 92, 93, you've got some of the bigger rookie cards. But 90 is a really nice set. Dave Milstead says, 88 Score. Love the photos and the borders that varied in color. I agree. And I've often said, 88 Score doesn't get the credit it deserves. And in fact, a lot of the credit it deserves stolen from 89 Upper Deck, because Score was doing a lot of the things that Upper Deck did in 89. But 89 Upper Deck gets all of the love for it. Midwest Box Break says, loved me some sports flicks back in the day. And the Upper Deck art cards. Yeah, the Upper Deck art cards were some of my favorites in each set. And I remember in, I think it was 91 or 92, I bought a box of those cards. And I actually pulled the subset of the art cards and had them in the plastic pages. And it was great because basically it was the team checklist. But there was an artist rendering of whoever the top player was in the set. And I think it was 92. It was great for me because you not only had this artwork of the best player from the team, but they also managed to work in some artwork of the stadium, the home field for the team. And me being a stadium nut, too, that was kind of a neat thing there. Let's see. Who else we have here? Anderson says 93 Donruss, very underrated, as is 92 Score. Now, I agree with you on 93 Donruss. 92 Score was good but not great. And that, again, was one of the, back-burnered sets. Much like 93 Donruss, you know, Leaf kind of kicked that to the back burner to work on the Leaf brand and the more premium brand. Score, the same thing, you know, by now, Pinnacle became the main focus of the company, and the Score brand was kind of kicked back. Also, another vote for 92 Score from Sports Cards Detour. I think it is because it is where I left, but I still rip 92 Score and Fleer as a guilty pleasure. But Upper Deck and Tops was to see if I can get the rookies, not so much the set. 92 Fleer. That's another one that often gets overlooked because, the Fleer people were looking more at the Ultra brand. That was getting moved to the forefront. But 92 Fleer with the green borders, the art cards in there as well, the Roger Clemens black border inserts, those were some really nice cards, and you can get 92 Fleer pretty cheap now. It's not a bad set to just build on the side. Clemente Card Project, still working on the 81 Tops set, less than 30 to go. Well, keep going. 81 Tops is the good but not great set from Tops in the early 80s, but certainly the best of the three options that year. I wouldn't necessarily call that a guilty pleasure. That's a fun set to kind of put together there. The Sons of Hail State, I have several, but 91 Fleer is it right now. So, you know, there's a lot of people talking crap about 91 Fleer, but you're very secretly buying this stuff. Sports Carter, I concur with 89 Donruss. Of course, Sports Carter's avatar on Twitter is 89 Donruss Pack. Let's see, Willie Morris, I think I have a few boxes of 91 Tops. Benji also says 91 Tops. And we also have, let's see, one more here from Jake. I got some 89 Fleer recently to pull the Billy Ripken card. Pretty fun. And I pulled one. Well, good for you, Jake. So a lot of interesting guilty pleasures there. And all of those sets that I mentioned, you can get packs. Now, this is online. You can get boxes of a lot of these packs for $10 to $12. You have to pay the shipping. So again, the total cost comes out to about $25. But if you go to your local card store or local card show, you can get these boxes like I did for anywhere $5 to $10. Just depends on how quickly the dealer wants to unload them. Also, for those of you who are pointing out the top sets from the mid to late 80s and early 90s, and you can do this with Fleer as well. Fleer did vending boxes too. Look for vending boxes. And again, you can get them for a fairly decent price online. You have to pay the shipping. That's really where the financial hurt comes. But if you go to a card shop or a card show that has them, often, you know, especially like the late 80s tops, they'll just give them to you for $4 or $5 a box. And that's 500 cards. You know, there's not the thrill of opening all the wax packs. And at the same time, the downside to some vending boxes is the cards get pushed around in those boxes. They're very tightly packed. So depending on how they were handled, since they were packaged, you do often get some damaged cards in that box. But that's always an option as well. But thank you to everybody who shared your guilty pleasures here, because it reaffirms one thing. First of all, I'm not the only one that goes 92 tops for $7. Yes. But also, it goes to show, while the hobby often dismisses a large swath of cards, again, the junk wax era, it's not really junk. Again, there's some really good sets, some really nice cards out there. Are they extremely valuable? No. But there's some good sets from the late 80s and early 90s that are out there. And for some of us, there's an emotional connection to them. So maybe it was that first pack that you bought. Maybe it was that first set that you completed. Maybe you and your dad or you and your mom used to go to the store and you'd buy a few of these packs. So all these years later, you're still tightly connected to that one set in particular. And there's nothing wrong with spending just a few bucks here and there and just killing some time, rainy day, snow day, you know, the wife and kids are, you know, out of town visiting the in-laws and you've got the house to yourself, you're just looking for something to do, nothing wrong with it, just opening up a cheap box of wax like this. Now, as for 92 tops, 792 card set, as I mentioned, the Manny Ramirez rookie card is the big rookie card from that set, but you do have a lot of other great cards, early career cards, and Hall of Fame players that are in there. And you also have the first big step forward in tops. While I look back at 91 tops and often lament that 91 tops was the last quote-unquote fun set, you know, the last set that had bubblegum in it, the last set that didn't have any insert cards, the last set that, you know, you could get for 50 cents or less for a pack, and you didn't get six cards, you know, you still got 15 cards in a pack. Even though I lament that, I remember in 1992, and still looking back now, the improvements that were made to the top set in 1992 were really, really good. The cardstock improves. The Topps gets rid of the gray cardstock, and for the first time since 1970 has a hard white cardstock, much like Fleer and Donruss had back in the day, Score as well. But Topps upgrades the cardstock. The photography gets much improved. You don't just have action shots, but you have some really nice staged pictures as well. And that actually started in 1991. Like, if you look at the 91 Topps Roger Clemens card, that's legendary because he's standing by the balls and strike counter, actually by the strike counter part of the balls and strike counter of the Green Monster at Fenway Park. And a lot of people love that type of photography. So in the 92 Topps set, you see Cal Ripken standing next to the Lou Gehrig monument in Yankee Stadium, and it's very artistically touched up. You know, it's like a Walter Ayos picture from Sports Illustrated, very beautifully done, and a little bit ballsy for Cal Ripken because he was still 3 years away from surpassing Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak. You know, this guy was still about 500 games away from doing it, yet he's still doing these pictures here. So you have a lot of great action shots. You've got a lot of great staged shots. You also have what I thought was one of the neatest things about the backs of the cards back then, and you didn't see a lot of cards do this. In fact, 92 Topps may be the only one that did this in terms of doing this on the regular player cards. They featured pictures of the player's home stadium. Now again, 1992, this is before the internet, which, you know, me being in my 40s, trying to explain to somebody younger what life was like before the internet is a very tough task to do. You know, it's almost like saying, back in the day when we had the horse and buggy, you know, it's kind of hard, and we're only talking 25 years ago. But anyways, you know, back in the early 90s, before the internet was big, if you wanted to see what the visiting ballpark looked like, you had to either go to that city or live in that city, or you had to go find a book with the pictures of the ballparks. So it was kind of neat. You flip the card over, and if there was room for it, there was a picture of Wrigley Field or Sky Dome or, you know, Milwaukee County Stadium. You know, everybody had their home park on there, and that was actually a very neat thing. Also, 92 Topps is best known for the gold card. And by the way, in this box, I did pull one gold card, and it was a pretty good one, Tom Glavine. So yeah, you know, I could probably sell that for a couple bucks. I can't go and PSA rate it, because when you flip it over, there's a very small printing error, just a little smudge of ink up in the corner by the card number. So it's not a PSA 10, but you know what? I could probably sell to somebody for $2 or $3 if I wanted to. It was the only gold card I got, but this is where Topps started experimenting with the insert cards. So you had the gold embossed base cards, and obviously if you got the card of the better players, those were a little more valuable. Same thing with the rookie cards. But Topps also had a subset of the subset, if you will. You could, through the game cards that they had, the little scratch-off game cards that they inserted, you could win gold cards through that, either by winning them in the game itself, or if you sent in, I think it was like 10 loser game cards, and you sent them 59 cents or whatever, they would send you a pack of gold cards. And I think you got like 8 cards in the pack. And the cards that you won said star winner down on the bottom. So there was a different market for the winner gold cards. The cards that you pulled from packs that didn't say winner were valued slightly higher. So this was the beginning of the special subsets, but then there was the even more special subset to the subset. And you would see that, and you still do to this day, with refractor cards. You know, oh, I got a refractor. Well, is it a regular refractor or is it gold? Is it purple? Is it blue? You know, all these different color variations, which sometimes cause the head to spin just a little bit. But 1992 was the point of no return. Even though 92 Topps was much improved, the hobby would not go back to, you know, what we saw back in the 80s. And that, to me, is kind of a bad thing. So, even though card sets were improved, I mentioned 92 Donruss, you know, they went to kind of a glossy design and, you know, featured full color photography on the front and back. And, Fleer had that emerald green look to it. Upper Deck kind of picked up their game in 92 as well. You had the insert cards and autograph Hall of Famer cards. And then, of course, you had the premium cards, the Stadium Clubs, the Ultras, the Leaf Studio cards that were coming out that kept raising the game even more and more and more and kept raising the price to keep doing this. So while there were some advances in card sets in 1992, the quote-unquote good old days of baseball cards were now firmly in the rear mirror. And, you know, you can point to the Junk Wax era starting in the late 80s. You can point to Upper Deck's arrival in 89. You can point to, you know, Stadium Club or Ultra, you know, these sets that came around in 91, 92. But really, like, the point of demarcation between the quote-unquote good old days and the business of baseball cards, in my opinion, it's 1992. So there's some good and there's certainly some bad that go with the advances that were made in the hobby in 1992. But because of some of the bad, because there was such a flood of cards, because there were a lot of people who got out of the hobby and the demand sunk down to new lows, you can still get some guilty pleasure cards for great prices. Let me throw out a few sets that I strongly encourage you to buy some packs or buy a box. Again, you're probably not going to spend more than $10 on the box itself. But 92 Topps is definitely one of them. Some of the other packs that were mentioned by our listeners, I would also in the Topps family throw in anything from 88 to 93. Some great sets there. Fleer, big fan of 1990 Fleer. I've always liked that one. 92 Fleer, so underrated. Fleer Ultra, too. Ultra had some great sets in 92 and 93. I've seen boxes for that for just $10, $12. And there's some beautiful cards in those sets. Also, on the Donruss side, I actually like 91 Donruss, as goofy as it looks. But also, you know, the 92, 93, 94 sets are top-notch. They're pretty good as well. And of course, Upper Deck. You know, you can get Upper Deck and Stadium Club packs and boxes for fairly cheap. Those are the cheap thrills. Those are the flings where, again, you just have an hour to kill one day. You got nothing better to do. Hey, here's this box of old wax. Let me open up a few packs or tear through the whole thing and see what I get out of it. Now, what did we get out of this 92 Topps box? A couple of interesting cards. I do want to point out one card that I got in the box that wasn't in the video break, but I want to bring up is Kevin Moss. This is one of those great names from baseball card collecting. Boy, you know, 1991, you had some pretty big swings and misses in baseball cards. Can you say Todd Van Poppel or Hensley Bam Bam Mullins? Kevin Moss was one of those guys. He was a guy who made his major league debut in the 1990 season, was going to be the heir apparent to first base behind Don Mattingly for the Yankees. You know, Mattingly was starting to age, so the thought was, well, he's going to get moved to DH. We've got this great kid, Kevin Moss. Had a stellar 1990 season. Sporting News Rookie of the Year runner-up behind Sandy Alomar. And everything is looking like roses for Kevin Moss in 1991. But he underperformed in 91. Then again, so with the Yankees, he's going back and forth between the majors and the minors. And his big league career flamed out just a few years later. Now, he's doing just fine today, if you're wondering. At last check, he was working for Charles Schwab as a financial consultant in California. But the Kevin Moss card, that is one, if you pull, you kind of go, ugh, because chances are you were probably ripping open packs for your Kevin Moss card, but you were overlooking the Sammy Sosa card or the Roberto Alomar card instead, which, of course, would become much more valuable down the line. But I bring up the Kevin Moss card not only because of that notoriety, but also I took a picture out of in one pack in this box. I got Kevin Moss, Nolan Ryan, and the Tom Glavine gold card. So that is the perfect combination of what you could get in a 92 Topps pack. You could get a Hall of Famer like Nolan Ryan, in fact, the number one card in that set. You could get a gold card of a future Hall of Famer, of Tom Glavine. And then you got the dud that was a big stud back in 1991 in Kevin Moss. Now, a few other cards I got in the video break, and quite a few miscreants. Derek Bell, definitely one of them. Bell was from Tampa, part of the Belmont Heights Little League, the Little League that was based in a pretty bad part of town, but the Little League that generated a ton of major league talent, most notably Dwight Gooden and Gary Sheffield, among several other players. But Derek Bell was from a slightly later generation. He played for Belmont Heights in the early 80s, was part of the two World Series, Little League World Series teams that lost to Taiwan. And back then, Taiwan used to win the World Series practically every year, up until I think 82. That's when the team from Washington State finally beat them and were Little League World Series champions. But Belmont Heights cranked out a lot of major league players. Bell was one of them. He went to King High School in Tampa, got drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays in 1987, quickly works his way up, makes his debut in Toronto in 1991, and is also part of a memorable gag in 1992. It was Fan Appreciation Day. You know, teams do this where they give prizes away to fans that register or season ticket holders. You know, they'll pull a name at random and you win, you know, an HD TV set, or you win two round trip tickets on Delta Airlines somewhere. Well, in 1992 at Fan Appreciation Day at Sky Dome, Joe Carter and Dave Winfield got the bright idea to take Derek Bell's car, and he had a pretty flashy car. This was before SUVs were a big popular vehicle. He had a big, shiny Jeep, top-of-the-line Jeep. I think it was like this, you know, either dark, dark green or black. I mean, it was a very nice car. So Joe Carter and Dave Winfield drive the car out onto the field, and they're waving at the fans. And, you know, the PA announcer is going, "Oh, you could win this brand new Jeep." And Bell is in the dugout, and he sees this going on. I still remember the video. In fact, I think it was featured on This Week in Baseball with Mel Allen. Derek Bell's mouth is just hanging open. I mean, the chin is hitting the floor because he thinks somehow there's a mix-up and the Blue Jays are going to auction off or give away his car. And it was pretty memorable. Unfortunately, that may be the high point of Derek Bell's career. He was traded to the San Diego Padres prior to the 1993 season, got in trouble with the law early on in the 94 season. Padres didn't want anything to do with him, so they trade him to Houston, part of the Ken Caminiti trade, and he has some success in Houston, but also has many off-the-field issues as well. Legendary standoff with Larry Durker, even while Durker was going through some major medical, life-threatening medical issues. So Bell would go on to play for the Mets, later the Pirates, and it was during his time with the Pirates in 2002, he was upset about being benched, and he decided to, and this was a public decision, by the way, he decided to go into what he called Operation Shutdown. where he basically sat out, and the Pirates, even as bad as the Pirates were in 2002, they were having none of that. So that was effectively how his playing career ended. For a while, he owned a bar here in Tampa, didn't do very well, has been arrested a couple times on drug possession, cocaine possession, was featured in a story on Belmont Heights Little League. I want to say it was last year they had a fundraiser, and he was featured in the local newspaper. But Derek Bell, a great story of so much talent, unfortunately wasted. That is unfortunately part of the storyline of a lot of the players, not all, but a lot of the players who made it to the big leagues. You know, they're from Belmont Heights. You know, they're born in this dirt poor condition and have a lot of adversity, but they get to the big leagues, they make a ton of money, and then they squander it. That was really unfortunate. Now, one of Derek Bell's teammates was Kelly Gruber. One of the great photography pieces in the 92 set was Kelly Gruber kind of, you know, with his bat over his shoulders and just kind of leaning on it. And, you know, it's kind of in the background of a sunset. It's actually kind of neat. Kelly Gruber, best remembered for his hair and not necessarily his on-the-field exploits, but he was an all-star third baseman, Gold Glove winner in 1990 as well, won the World Series with the Blue Jays in 92, got traded to the Angels in 93, where he told them, oh, by the way, I've got bulging discs in my neck. And the Angels were really upset. They figured that the Blue Jays must have known about this, and they pulled a fast one on them. So Gruber's career with the Angels was very short-lived. He tried to make a comeback with Baltimore a few years later. That didn't work out. And he is noted as a motivational speaker, but his motivational speaking has gotten him in trouble of late. In fact, this past year, he was thrown out of the Canadian Hall of Fame speaking series when he was just belligerent on stage, made some very unflattering, misogynistic remarks to the female host of a panel that they were having at the Hall of Fame event. And he's also been dealing with some drug and alcohol abuse issues over the last year as well. So I hope Kelly Gruber gets the help that he needs because he was a good guy. And like I said, an overlooked player. And I got to meet him back in spring training, 1991. Still have the ball and card that he signed for me. A couple other miscreants from this pack. Kevin Elster. We've talked about Kevin Elster before. My favorite story about Kevin Elster, allegedly, according to a book about the 86 Mets that came out about 15 years ago, was Elster was alleged to have been too busy banging the girlfriend of a San Diego Padres player in the clubhouse when Davey Johnson was looking for him to pinch hit in San Diego. But Elster is also better known for his prowess in the field. He held the major league record for consecutive games without an error at shortstop for a few years before Cal Ripken broke that. He also set the major league record for the most runs batted in during a season for a number 9 hitter. And opening day at Pac Bell Park in San Francisco, now known as AT&T Park, Elster hit 3 home runs as a member of the Dodgers against the hometown San Francisco Giants. Elster, by the way, played the role of Pat Corning in the movie Little Big League. Speaking of Little Big League, another one of the guys that we pulled from this pack, Mickey Tettleton, was part of the movie as well. Also, if the Tettleton name rings a bell, his son, Tyler Tettleton, was an outstanding quarterback for Ohio University just a few years ago. Played briefly with the Hamilton Ticats in the CFL, but to the best of my knowledge, his football career is over. But his dad, Mickey Tettleton, had a very odd batting stance. His bat was held almost parallel to his body, and he stood straight up in the batter's box. And Mickey had some pop in his bat. He was a 2-time All-Star, first with Baltimore, later with Detroit, 3-time Silver Slugger. And he claimed that his secret to success was eating Fruit Loops. Yes, Fruit Loops, the key to success for Mickey Tettleton, Major League Baseball player. That's reminds me of the John Belushi sketch on Saturday Night Live. What made him an Olympian champion? Little chocolate donuts. A couple other cards that we pulled here. Ron Karkovice, who I joked is best known as Carlton Fisk's backup in Chicago. And that was the case for many, many years. While he was not known for his power at the plate, he was a very solid defensive catcher. He spent his entire major league career with White Sox from 1986 to 1997. Very stocky build, was nicknamed Officer Karkovice by Ken Harrelson because he just kind of looked like the stereotypical fat police officer. However, despite his girth, actually hit an inside-the-park grand slam in the Metrodome in 1990 off of Twins pitcher David West, thus the least likely player to hit an inside-the-park home run in Grand Slam to boot. Later, had a brief career as a coach throughout the minor leagues. And lastly, speaking of mischiefs, Lenny Dykstra, part of that 86 Mets team, also known for his time in Philadelphia, part of that really scruffy, thuggish kind of Phillies team that made it to the World Series in 1993. Unfortunately, better known for his activities off the field since then. Well known that he was a steroid abuser during his playing days, drug abuser, alcohol abuser as well. In fact, was recently was arrested for something. What was it? Let me see. What did he? Here we go. Yeah. Arrested for uttering terroristic threats and for possession of drugs, allegedly holding a gun to the head of an Uber driver when the driver refused to change destinations. This happened in May, and just a few weeks ago, he was indicted for cocaine and meth possession and making terroristic threats. I saw a picture of Lenny Dykstra along with his former Phillies teammate Dale Murphy back in, is it March maybe? I think they were at a book signing somewhere. And let me tell you, Lenny Dykstra, and steroids and drugs and alcohol will do this for you. Lenny Dykstra is 55 years old. He doesn't look a day over 85. He looks terrible. He looks absolutely terrible. And I hope he gets the help he needs, but it may be too late. One other interesting note about Lenny Dykstra. He has become the face of a financial company. One of these credit lenders, Rebound Finance, basically made him the ambassador of the company. And apparently the company, their job is to, quote, provide hardworking Americans with the credit products they deserve. Well, with the financial, a.k.a. bankruptcy history of Lenny Dykstra, I'm thinking there perhaps may be a better spokesperson for that cause. Well, 92 Tops, fun, cheap set to get. There's lots of fun, cheap sets. They're guilty pleasures. Go ahead, indulge in them. It's perfectly fine and pretty inexpensive as well. And thanks for sharing yours with me. Thanks for tuning in on Wax Ecstatic. Again, our next program 2 weeks from today, that will be Friday, December 14th. We'll have our video link out on December 13th, and earlier that week, we'll let you know what we're talking about. We'll let you pick some packs to break, and we will have another fun discussion for you. Again, you can listen to us on Audioboom, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry, also Google Play and Spotify. And please, if you have an extra few bucks, make that cash donation to PayPal.me/WaxEcstatic so we can keep the show going, keep the packs coming, and keep the memories flowing throughout this off season. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thanks for listening to Wax Ecstatic. We'll see you next time.